Welcome to another episode of the Half-Baked History Podcast, where we get half-baked and talk about history.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are we talking about?
How do you know it's a who?
I'm just...
You're going out on a limb?
Yeah.
It's a who.
All right.
We're talking about Hedy Lamarr today.
All right.
Do you know who Hedy Lamarr is?
No. This is my first hearing of said person.
Okay. So she was a... Well, do you want me to ruin it for you?
I don't know. It's your story.
All right. It's a surprise. Hedy Lamarr. She's born... Get ready for this.
Okay.
Hedwig.
Oh.
Ava Maria Keisler.
What a name.
Hedwig.
Is that like the owl?
I don't know. Maybe.
Is it spelled the same?
Yeah.
Oh. So how do you spell her name, Hedy? Is it two D's?
No, just one. H-E-D-Y.
Okay.
So she was born Hedwig on November 9th, 1914. What?
It's just funny. She was born Hedwig.
She was born in Vienna, Austria,
which
at the time was Austria and Hungary. They were like one country.
Yeah.
She was an only child born to Emil and Gertrude Keisler.
Gertrude's just such an unfortunate name.
It sounds like
name.
A pickle.
It does sound like a pickle. It's an unfortunate name.
Anyway, Gertrude was a pianist, and she came from an upper-class Hungarian Jewish family.
Mm.
And Emil was a director at a bank. So they were pretty well off at the time.
They had cool jobs.
Yeah, they're in like upper society. Mm-hmm. From a young age, her mother would get Hedy involved in the arts by like putting her into ballets and piano lessons. And they would take her to like the theater and opera all the time. So they were like really exposing her to the arts.
Okay.
Her father and her would take long walks, and he would explain to her like how different technology worked. So from a very young age, she was like super interested in like the mechanics of stuff.
Oh, so she's getting like all of her arts and culture stuff from her mom and the tech side from her dad.
Yes.
Okay.
At a very young age, she would take apart like little machines like her music box or like stuff like that and would put them back together to like understand how they worked.
Oh.
She was like super interested in the mechanics.
I always wanted to take stuff apart, but I never had the faith I could put it back together. I was like, no, I can only destroy.
I can only destroy. You couldn't rebuild.
I didn't think so.
Hedy became interested in theater and film, so she began taking acting classes around the age of 12.
So is that just like, I guess, in the local area?
Yeah. Like she would go to like the college for her acting classes.
Oh, all right.
You know? At the same time, she won a beauty contest.
Wow.
Yeah. So this led her further into that like acting, modeling side of like that's what she was going to pursue.
Wow.
She wasn't going to pursue her mind.
Interesting. I would say she's like all over the place. Mm-hmm. She's like into art, technology.
Yeah.
Modeling.
So since these things kind of fell her way, she decided that like education and knowledge would take like the backseat. Like she was going to ride this wave.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of times people think like, oh, that's always going to be there.
Yeah.
I can always go back to school.
Well, and it's a shame because she was considered to be very, like, brilliant for her age. Mm. So at the age of 16, she drops out of school and she goes to the largest Austrian film production company.
Ooh.
And she gets hired as a script girl.
What do they do?
You know, I had it written in here and then I took it out because I was like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
She's a script girl. One of those.
Yeah, I mean, she did stuff with the scripts. In 1933, she gets her big break, and she stars as the lead in a movie called Ecstasy.
Oh, what an intriguing name.
So the movie Ecstasy was, as you would imagine, extremely controversial at the time.
Yeah, this is the 30s?
Yes, 1933.
Oh, my God.
So we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive into that. So it's a romantic drama where Lamar has a few brief nude scenes, as well as a scene where she simulates an orgasm.
Wow. For shame. How dare she?
This was the first non-pornographic portrayal of sex in a film, and it was the first on-screen depiction of a female orgasm.
Wow. That's so out in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are not going to be happy about that.
Other than the, like, brief nude scenes, the actors' faces were all that was shown. It wasn't, like, full body, like, sex scenes, you know? The film was denounced by people at the time. Hitler banned it.
Oh, my gosh.
The U.S. didn't give it a theater run until, like, years later. And even then, it was just a limited run. But it, like, got recognized as this great piece of artwork, basically.
Yeah, well, it's like history film.
Exactly. Yeah. So she gains global recognition. So even though, like, a lot of people hadn't seen it, they knew her of, like, she's the ecstasy woman.
Yeah. Man. You know Hitler had, like, his own copies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
100%. That freak.
No one can see it but me.
So that same year, she starts working in multiple plays, and she becomes this hugely successful stage actress. So, like, their equivalent of, like, Broadway.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So she pivots into that.
Yeah. She goes from the movie Ecstasy into stage work, and she was planning to just kind of, like, stay with doing that.
I bet she even had, like, at least a minor draw. People are like, oh, that's the one from Ecstasy.
Dude, she had a ton of admirers.
Really?
Like, people would send her flowers and, like, shit like that. One of her admirers, Friedrich Mandl. We're going to refer to him as Fritz.
Fritz. Good. That's easier for me.
Fritz becomes obsessed with Lamar, and he is intent on meeting her.
Here we go.
Let's talk about who Mandl is. He's an Austrian military arms merchant and a munitions manufacturer. He was the third richest man in Austria. He was basically the equivalent of, like, Henry Ford in Austria.
Uh-oh. Don't like that.
So Lamar falls for his charm, his personality, and of course, yeah, the money isn't bad either. Hetty's parents do not approve of Mandl at all.
Yeah.
She and her family were Jewish, and Mandl, even though he had a Jewish father, was a prominent fascist.
Oh. Mm.
He had strong ties to Mussolini.
Uh-oh.
And to Hitler.
Yeah.
Mussolini even attended a couple parties that he threw.
Oh, no. That's...
It's no good.
You want to talk about red flags?
That's the biggest one.
I just had a friend of Hitler's over. It's not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
Just a couple times.
We got drunk together a few times. Lamar pushes past all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And she marries him on August 10th, 1933.
Well, she's in love.
She was only 18 at the time.
Ugh.
He was 33.
Ugh.
So he, of course, turns out to be very controlling and jealous.
A fascist? Yeah. No.
Shocking, right? He was constantly convinced that she was having affairs.
Mm-hmm.
He was so controlling that he would have their maids listen in on her phone calls and all of her conversations. And he was constantly having her watched by, like, the hired help.
Ugh. That's awful.
So he keeps her basically in this, they live in a castle because he's so fucking rich. And he forbids her from continuing an acting career.
So he's like turning her into like...
a puppet.
Well, I was going to say like one of the Disney princesses that's just stuck in the castle.
Yeah, exactly. And she's in a literal castle. Mm. He hated her role in Ecstasy so much that he spent the equivalent today of $6 million buying every single copy to try to suppress the film.
What a nut. And it's like, you know, his fascination with her started there.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, of
course. It's not like he was like, oh, my God, this Broadway actress. Incredible.
Bravo. Yeah. This, of course, is unsuccessful. Basically, the more he purchased, the more they were like, we got to keep printing it.
Yeah, somebody's buying this stuff. Yeah,
exactly. So she, of course, is incredibly unhappy in her marriage. She later said that Mandel saw her as this doll, like just to be used. And she was forced into hosting Mussolini in her home, like for parties.
Yeah.
And she's never being left alone. So like,
It's a
shitty marriage.
It's not a great way to live.
Yeah.
No matter how much money you have.
He was so controlling, he would bring her to his business meetings so that she wouldn't be left at home alone.
Yeah.
But she found these meetings fascinating because her like mechanical mind is like, oh, I'm like talking to all these scientists and like these technology developers and like, you know, she was interested in this kind
of
stuff.
Interested and she just kind of gets it.
So she was like, joke on you. I like coming to these meetings. Thank you very much.
I know more than you do.
Exactly. So the marriage becomes just unbearable. It's 1937 and she makes her escape. She was, well.
Does she literally escape?
She literally escapes.
Oh, wow.
Here's how she does it.
Yeah.
She was in charge of hiring all of the maids that worked on the estate. So she hired a woman that had like a passing resemblance to her.
Okay.
So while hosting one of their dinner parties, she, Lamar, makes herself and this maid that looks like her both tea. And she puts some sleeping powder in the maid's cup.
Oh, so she just like completely drugs her.
Yeah, she knocks her out. So she disguises herself in the maid's uniform.
Right.
She lines the inside of the uniform with all of her like jewels and jewelry.
Smart.
And she fled the castle on bike.
Man.
She took the maid's bicycle and fled.
Genius.
Yeah. So she went all the way to London because her parents had like friends in London that she could stay with.
Wow. Man. That maid did not consent, but hey, she got out of there.
She had to escape.
Yeah. She had to.
Yeah.
He probably would have killed her.
Probably eventually.
Yeah.
Or she would have just killed herself.
And she got her jewels. Smart.
So even though she spoke no English, she began living in London.
She doesn't speak English?
She speaks no English.
At all?
No.
Okay.
So she begins living in London. And once she's settled there, she divorces Fritz. So it's done.
Oh, it's over.
It's over. That year, in 1937, the head of MGM is in London scouting for talent.
And who does his wandering eye see?
Who does his eye behold? But Hedy Lamarr.
The star of Ecstasy. He just like walks up to her and he's like, you look familiar.
Your face resembles something I've seen before. So she's introduced to Louis B. Mayer, who is the owner and like head of MGM. Mayer was unsure that she could make it in the U.S. after being in Ecstasy.
Oh.
Because he was like, this is still causing shockwaves. Yeah. So like, you're too recognizable.
You're very controversial.
Exactly. Regardless of that, he offers her a 6-month contract for $125 a week, which is the equivalent today of $2,500 a week.
Wow. Okay. I mean, he didn't have to take a chance on her.
Yeah. So and like, that's a lot of money a week.
For 6 months.
Yeah. She, however, believed that she was worth more than that rate, right. So she turned the deal down.
Mm.
Minutes later, like mm-hmm. as she's leaving, she immediately regrets the decision.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was going to say, I don't know if she's going to get a better deal.
Yeah. So she decides to book herself passage on the same New York-bound ocean liner as Mayer.
Yeah.
So she's like, all right, fuck it. I'm going to New York, and I'm going to convince this guy to hire me again.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the ship reaches New York, she had convinced him to sign her to a 7-year contract.
Oh, my God.
For $500 a week.
Wow.
Which is $10,000 today.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You go, Hetty. God dang.
She learned just enough English to be able to negotiate her contract.
She's just pestering him every day on this boat voyage. She's just like, hey.
So, listen.
Yeah.
Allegedly, there's a story that when she was on the ship, she, like, wore what jewels she had left that she smuggled out, and she wore this like ball gown to like the dinner because you had to dress up super fancy. And when she walked into the ballroom, the whole place went silent.
Oh, wow.
And all eyes were on her.
Yeah.
And Louis B. Mayer was like, I must have her.
She is the one.
She is the chosen one. There's one condition to this contract, though.
Uh-huh.
She has to change her name.
Oh.
He says, your name, Hetty Keisler, it's too connected with the reputation of ecstasy. Mm-hmm. We have to change it. So Mayer's wife suggests the name Lamar, which is after the silent film star Barbara Lamar, who was like known for her beauty at the time.
Oh, okay.
So she's like, you're so beautiful. You're going to take this woman's last name.
That's right. We're going to name you after her.
Yeah. So in 1938, Mayer brings Lamar to Hollywood, and he begins advertising her as the world's most beautiful woman.
Oh, wow.
That's how hot sexy she is.
That is quite a moniker to have to live up to.
Would you like to see a picture of her?
Sure.
Hold, please.
She's very pretty.
She's very beautiful.
Yeah. I don't know what the competition was, per se, but she's very beautiful.
Well, like Judy Garland.
Okay, yeah.
You know, she's so beautiful that she's the inspiration behind Disney's Snow White.
Wow.
Which came out later that year.
Yeah.
And she's also the inspiration for Catwoman in all of the Batman comics.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, I did not know that.
Yep. So once she's in Hollywood, Lamar has her first taste of stardom in the film Algiers, where she's cast as the leading lady.
Oh, cool.
So this film creates like a national sensation. Everybody wants to see this Austrian actress that nobody knows, but she's the most beautiful star in the world. So there's like all this, you know, hype around it.
Who is it?
Who is it? So it's reported by one viewer who was at like the premiere of the movie.
Yeah.
That when Hedy Lamarr makes her first appearance on the movie screen, everybody gasped.
Ooh.
Because of how beautiful she was.
She was just that breathtaking.
She said she literally took one's breath away.
Wow.
That's how, like, whoa.
Wow.
This woman's perfection.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
That someone would either experience that or make that up.
Yeah. Imagine, like, going to the movies and being like, oh my God. That's the most beautiful person in the world.
You just drop your popcorn.
Your Coca-Cola. That person is just so striking. Who says that? After her movie Algiers, she's of course on every magazine in Hollywood. She becomes an overnight star. Everybody wants her.
Of course.
She's even asked out by the future president, JFK.
Really? And she turns him down.
Yeah. She does.
She's like, nah.
No.
I don't have time for you.
So she, of course, gets typecast as like the glamorous, exotic seductress in all of her roles.
Yeah.
The films really emphasized her like beauty and sensuality. So the lines and the character weren't very important.
Right.
It's like, you know, you're just here for the looks.
Yeah, exactly. They just wanted her on the bill.
Exactly. She, however, wants to be recognized for her talent and not just her beauty.
Right.
She says that, like, this beauty is a mask that she can't take off. It's like, I want to be in the better roles, but I'm too fucking beautiful. Can you believe that shit?
Listen to my first world problems.
I'm too beautiful. So, between the years 1939 and 1941, she goes on to marry Gene Markey, who's a producer and screenwriter. And he's, like, famous at the time. Like, he's a pretty big screenwriter. He promises her that they'll write screenplays together and will start developing more challenging roles for you to show your range.
Yeah.
So that you won't just be, you know, the pretty face.
Right. Okay.
Within a few months of getting married, Markey is regularly cheating on Hetty and doing it openly. So the marriage ends.
Yeah.
Along with the promise of better roles.
Sure. Yeah. It all goes down the drain.
So between 1939 and 1942, so like 1 year further, she was in 10 feature films for MGM.
Whoa.
They worked her 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And of course, to be able to keep up with this pace, she was given pep pills.
Yeah.
Just like Judy Garland. Mm-hmm. And then sleeping pills to sleep at night. So while other stars are going home super late and, you know, immediately going to bed because they're on these sleeping pills, Lamar would go home and start inventing.
Oh.
Her mind's just always at work,
It's working too hard for her to go to sleep.
It's just going into overtime. At her house, she has an entire inventing table and workstation.
Nice.
She even was given a small set of equipment that she could... She was also given a small set of equipment that she could cheat. Oh, man.
You okay over there?
Apparently not. Oh, man. She was given a small set of equipment that she would keep in her trailer to tinker with between scenes.
Oh, cool. So she just had like a little station.
Yeah. She's just like so into inventing that she's like, I must have an on-the-go option.
Yeah. Nice.
She begins dating this guy, Howard Hughes. Have you ever heard of him before?
He sounds familiar.
So he's a very prolific inventor and pilot. They made like a movie about him. I think Leo DiCaprio played him, the movie Aviator. But he's like super rich.
Yeah.
So they begin dating and he encourages her to like keep inventing. And he says, I have all these scientists at my disposal because I'm an inventor and a pilot.
Yeah.
So use them as you will.
Oh, cool.
So now her experimenting starts to kind of take hold of something.
This is like everything's breaking right for her this time.
Yeah,
she's like, I got this great guy and
he's a little weird,
but like I have his scientists. So it kind of evens out.
Yeah. So one of her inventions during this time was a tablet that you could add to water and it would turn the water into a Coca-Cola.
What? Ma'am, she's doing God's work.
So no one has Coca-Cola during World War II, which we're in. And she wants to create this tablet for service members and like the people working in factories.
Oh, okay.
So she wants to compress the ingredients into a cube so that once you add it to water, it'll dissolve and fizz up and you've got a soda.
Yeah.
Ultimately, this invention doesn't go anywhere.
Oh.
It ends up not working because she didn't take into account the difference of water quality across the U.S.
Oh.
So they couldn't find a way to make it consistent. But I mean,
yeah,
what a wild fucking invention.
That would have been so cool. Damn.
So we're going to take a sidestep to World War II.
Mm-hmm. There's bigger things going on.
Yes. So around 1940, the German U-boats have England like completely surrounded.
Mm-hmm.
Things are looking pretty bleak for the Allies.
Ugh.
Hetty, who is extremely patriotic, wanted to create a way for the Allies and the British to like kind of even the score.
Oh, okay.
So she talks to her friend, George Anthile, I think.
Anthile? Sure.
George Anthile.
George.
Anthile.
Wait.
What?
Before we go any further.
Yeah.
Your eye makeup looks really good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I thought it looked good too.
Yeah, it looks really good. I had to say it now because it'll be gone in like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. So she tells her friend George Anthile
mm-hmm.
that she feels super uncomfortable making all of this money as an actress at the time when like the world's in the state that it is.
Yeah.
She has vast knowledge of the munition and like secret weapons thanks to her time with good old Fritz.
Oh, wow.
So she tells George that she's seriously considering quitting MGM
mm-hmm.
and that she's going to join the Inventors Council, which is this American organization that was like created for the world.
Oh, okay.
For the world. For the war.
For the war. For the world to fear.
Yeah.
Okay, so I get it. I mean, she's got a bunch of money. She feels guilty.
Mm-hmm.
She can do more.
She wants to actually be useful.
Yeah.
So she puts that inventor's mind to work. She puts her beauty aside.
Yeah.
And she puts her thinking cap on. Mm. So she and her friend George realize that radio communications at the time aren't secure. So they were able to be jammed or hacked by either side very easily.
Oh.
U-boats were using radio controls to get their torpedoes to their targets, which was like new technology at the time. To avoid the radio technology on the Allies' side from getting jammed or intercepted, Lamar thought instead of one frequency communicating to the... Wait, I said that right. Communicating.
Wait a second.
Okay.
Supposedly.
Lamar thinks instead of transmitting one frequency communicating to the torpedo, why not have the frequencies be constantly changing? So the transmission from the ship to the torpedo have to be in sync with one another, but they can like frequency hop to keep their message going.
Oh, okay.
So like, what if?
Yeah, because then they'd be safer.
Yeah, exactly. So if they were able to achieve this, if one frequency gets jammed, it's only like a split second in the sequence because it's constantly hopping.
Right. Okay.
So she comes up with the idea. George comes into play here. He begins with the implementation. How can we make this work?
Yeah.
So he was able to figure out how to synchronize self-playing pianos. Those things with the big like scrolls that play themselves. He was able to like create something with radios to synchronize them all. So he's like, what if we made this technology smaller?
Yeah. Now you're thinking, George.
Exactly. So the finished product is a frequency sync that could be communicated on 88 different channels. And it would be impossible to hack at the time.
I was going
to
say, you're not hacking that.
Yeah.
Not
I mean, they
the,
don't.
Not in the 40s.
Yeah. So they came up with this whole frequency hopping on 88 different channels. They bring the idea to the Inventors Council.
Mm-hmm.
The Inventors Council agrees that this is ingenious.
Yeah.
So they connect the two with a physicist to design the like electronic portion of it.
Okay.
They create a patent for it. They get it working. They have, you know, they shrunk it down and everything. Like, this is the real deal. They bring it to the U.S. Navy. And they say, no thanks.
Why?
So the U.S. Navy at the time was not open to using inventions that were made outside of the military.
Oh my God.
It was also kind of difficult to implement at the time, but the main reason was that they don't trust it.
Oh, it's so stupid.
So she comes up with this ingenious idea.
Yeah.
Her brilliant mind.
Uh-huh.
The Navy tells her, you would be a better help to the war effort if you would use your celebrity status to sell some war bonds. So like,
oh my God, man.
Go entertain the troops, honey.
What a bunch of idiots.
Uh-huh. So
the Navy's so stupid.
They're so just.
They think they know best.
I just lost the thought. My mind just went blank. It was like a cloud just passed over my eyes. So Hetty is like, okay, if that's the only way I can help.
I guess screw my invention.
Screw my mastermind.
Yeah.
So she goes to the Hollywood Canteen, which is like this huge USO hall that was in Hollywood. And she would entertain the troops there and she would volunteer. And she was really doing as much as she could.
Yeah.
She wasn't a U.S. citizen at this point.
Since her inventions were worth nothing.
They weren't good enough.
She just had to go to the hall.
So she wasn't a U.S. citizen at this point. Uh-huh. She loves the U.S. that much that she's like, I'm doing this out of the goodness of my heart.
Right, yeah. She doesn't owe the U.S. this.
Yeah. She did go on to sell war bonds, and she ends up selling $25 million worth of bonds.
Whoa.
That's not even in today's money.
Oh my God.
In today's money, that's worth $343 million.
That's insane.
Yeah. So she really puts in her best effort in both of these things.
Like $250 million she raised over that.
So once the Navy like tells her, use your looks, honey. Uh-huh. We don't want this invention. They seize her patent in 1942 as the property of an enemy alien. So they use her to sell war bonds and act as this advertisement. And, you know, you're only good for your looks, honey.
Yeah.
And when she has this ingenious invention, she's now an enemy alien.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, U.S. Navy.
Thanks a lot, man. So now we're going to go back to the movies.
All right.
Back to the silver screen.
That's right. She's getting back on that horse.
Exactly. So she wanted these more challenging roles.
Right.
She knew that she wasn't like being respected in Hollywood the way that she wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
So she would push Mayer to put her in like better roles.
Okay.
And she would argue with him all the time. Instead, he puts her in this movie called White Cargo.
Okay.
It's seen as kind of like a third-rate, like, dirty film.
Oh, no.
And it's made specifically as, like, a distraction for the troops. This ends up being her most well-known role.
Mm.
Because, well, not solely because, but partially because it was like almost immediately parodied and like ridiculed.
Oh,
so even though it was a commercial success, she was like getting ridiculed all the time for it. When she didn't want to be in it in the first place, she's just being forced into it.
Ugh, that sucks.
So she, of course, is pissed off about this.
Yeah.
She now gets the reputation of being difficult to work with because she was fighting for better roles.
Yeah, how dare you not want to play this role.
Yeah. In 1945, her contract with MGM comes to an end, and she decides, I'm going to create my own movie production company then.
Why not?
Yeah.
You go do it.
This is completely unheard of at the time.
Oh.
Especially for women. Like, apparently it was frowned upon when, like, actors would then, like, try to open their own production company.
Oh. Yeah, of course. Well, you can't disrespect the big bad movie companies.
Well, then add on the fact that she's a woman.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Excuse me? No. I don't think so. She does it anyway. She produces three of her own films, but basically, since Hollywood didn't like the way that she did things, they rejected them and like wouldn't buy them. They still end up getting released, but they're not very successful.
Of course, yeah.
By this point, she's on her third marriage, which didn't last very long.
Yeah.
It left her as a single mother, and she's in financial trouble. Because she just doesn't have the money.
Yeah, well, she's not acting. She's trying to run this company.
Right.
Ugh.
She does catch a break, and she's cast in the biggest and most successful film of her career. She's in Samson and Delilah. It's like a biblical epic.
Oh.
And it's directed by, like, Cecil B. DeMille or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. When, so like, when is this?
The 1946, maybe.
Okay.
Because then you take like a film, history of film or something. So yeah, it might have been in that.
Maybe.
Anyway, this revives her career and her reputation.
Nice.
But it doesn't last long and her career begins to decline again.
Ugh.
She's getting roles, but they're in movies that aren't like overly successful. Mm-hmm. So she's just kind of going into decline. She then moves on to marry Howard Lee, who is an oil tycoon from Texas.
This is her fourth marriage.
This is her fourth marriage.
Wow.
She relocates herself and her children to Texas. And she again becomes kind of this trophy wife to this big oil tycoon.
Right. Seems par for the course.
Exactly. The only positive to come out of this is that they created Villa Lamar Ski Resort.
Oh.
So she built a ski resort to resemble her homeland of Austria. And she spends years perfecting it.
Really?
Yeah. It like means a huge deal to her because she's like constantly homesick. So like she perfects it.
Well, and she's like back to the trophy wife thing. So
exactly.
This is a like creative outlet for her.
Exactly. The resort was also pretty financially successful. It earned millions while it was in operation.
Nice.
So, I mean, it was going pretty well. Her marriage, though, with Howard Lee begins to deteriorate.
Uh-huh.
And the two start the divorce process.
Right.
She didn't go after any of his money. She said that she only wanted the ski resort and the divorce. That's it.
Wow.
You keep all your oil money. I just want the resort. So while this is happening, her son is in a car crash in California.
Mm.
He's almost killed from this.
Yeah.
So while he's in the hospital, she's there with him. She's summoned to court to testify in like divorce proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
Her stress level at this point is like
through the fucking roof.
Yeah. So instead of leaving her son and going herself, she sends her film body double in her place.
Oh my God.
This infuriates the judge.
Yeah, duh.
Yeah. So he cuts her share of the divorce settlement. He takes away everything.
Yeah.
Including the ski resort and gives it all to Howard Lee.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
It's not the best call.
Yeah.
It's brutal, but that's not the best call from the get-go.
Yeah. She suffers a nervous breakdown after this.
Who wouldn't, right? Yeah. I'm ready to.
She becomes more unstable and she begins being treated by Dr. Max Jacobson, known as Dr. Feelgood.
Oh my God.
He was the real deal.
Wow. He's Dr. Feelgood.
Mm-hmm. The original. So Hedy Lamarr is a patient of his from the 1950s up until he loses his medical license in 1974.
For like 20 years.
Yeah. He treats a ton of celebrities. He treats JFK, Judy Garland, Elizabeth Taylor, like everybody's using this guy.
Yeah.
He was known for his vitamin elixirs and he would inject these into his patients.
Ugh.
So Lamar thought she was getting vitamin B shots and like a mixture of vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
What she was actually getting was 40 milligrams of methamphetamine.
Oh. Well, you know, that'll keep you...
It is legal at the time.
Yeah.
But that's what she was getting. So, of course, she becomes addicted.
Yeah.
And she starts having erratic behavior because she's just like going out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's on meth.
Yeah. And she's having like withdrawal and doesn't know it.
Right.
And like, oh God. It's like someone spiked the punch times 1,000.
Yes, exactly. Things continue to decline. Lamar is arrested in 1966 for shoplifting.
Ugh.
She's later acquitted, stating that it was a big misunderstanding, but she still now has this reputation, you know? This doesn't help her image, obviously.
Yeah, from ecstasy star to shoplifter.
Mm-hmm. So she now becomes like the subject of ridicule and parodies and, you know, in skits and stuff like that. She felt that her beauty and youth was like impossible to live up to. And she begins having plastic surgeries by the time she's in her 40s.
Oh no.
So it's like, that's all that she was ever rewarded for was her looks. So true to her inventiveness mind, though, she was even groundbreaking for plastic surgeons because she would tell them exactly where to put the incisions so that it would like be hidden in the crease of an elbow or the knee or like behind the ear. And surgeons said that they never did that up until that point. Man. And so it was her that changed those procedures.
Yeah, she's like a genius.
And like, she has stuff that creeps into our day-to-day lives that just nobody knows about, you know?
Wow.
The public and press are very cruel about her looks because they, of course, are they, of course, are holding these beauty standards up that she cannot meet. And so this just like creates this cycle of her putting stress and pressure on herself. She starts removing herself from the public eye. She becomes kind of like a recluse.
Mm.
She continues to get more and more plastic surgery, each one kind of fixing the last one.
Yeah.
You know? Ugh,
so sad.
Yeah. For her career, she's offered like small roles of like bit parts or commercials, but she never accepts any of them.
Yeah. Well, she still probably wants to
be beautiful. Yeah.
Well, be beautiful, but also she probably still wants to like
have like real roles.
Yeah.
This makes her retreat from the public eye even more.
Mm.
Her financial situation is worsening because she's not acting. So she's only getting like a small bit of social security and like a small amount from the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah.
So she's on desperate times. In 1969, she writes out to a friend of hers who's in the Navy. And she asks about the patent, wondering whatever happened to it.
Yeah.
Because like maybe there's something in that. She found out that the patent was finally being used. So by 1962, her frequency hopping had received an update, and it was now being put in all U.S. Navy ships.
Whoa. So now it was finally being cost-worthy and efficient.
Mm-hmm. So she felt that she should have been given money for that because they're using her patent.
Right.
Patent laws in the U.S. state that once a patent expires, it becomes available for common use.
Mm-hmm.
So they state that it was under common use because the inventor apparently has like 6 years to like sue if they think it was used.
Oh, okay.
She missed that window.
Right. After it was seized.
Exactly. So the Navy claimed that they didn't use her patent before it went into common use. So like it didn't matter anyway. Like you're not getting paid.
Mm.
Turns out the Navy did use her patent before it expired in 1955.
Reverse card.
No, reverse. They had given the patent to a contractor to use and to create this kind of like buoy that would use it to like direct ships and submarines. Mm. So that was the first deployment of frequency hopping and they used it without paying her.
Uh-oh. What happens now, Navy?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Her life continues to decline. She has another arrest for shoplifting, which is settled.
Yeah.
But then she has more plastic surgeries and she just really begins to deteriorate. Mm. In the last decades of her life, she became a complete recluse, only communicating with people like by phone, including her family.
Wow.
On January 19th of 2000, Hedy Lamarr passes away in her home in Florida from heart disease at the age of 85.
Wow. She was older than I expected for her to live to.
Yeah. Lamar's invention of frequency hopping is used today in GPSs, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, cell phones,
oh my God.
Satellites, U.S. military top secret communications. They even use it for nuclear command so that they can use a safe way to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
The market value of frequency hopping today is worth over $30 billion.
My God, dude. And they just seized it from her.
She wasn't given anything.
Yeah. Just a life of ridicule.
Yeah. It wasn't until 1990, when she does an interview with Forbes magazine, that the public learns that she had, like, any inventing background. That's what she's contributed to society.
Wow. Man, it's like, I bet there were people reading that and they were like, she says she's an inventor.
Mm-hmm.
And they like, then they go look it up. They're like, oh crap, look, she's got this patent.
It's a patent.
Yeah.
It's there. In 2014, Hedy Lamarr was posthumously inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame.
Nice.
And before her death, she received an award in recognition for her inventions.
That's cool.
She always wanted to be remembered for her mind rather than her looks. And in her like years since death, it's kind of happened.
Wow.
Because like you had no idea who she was.
Yeah. No, I had no idea. And I mean, the impact she's had on the world.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, her beauty raised lots of money for the war.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, isn't that wild, dude?
That is incredible.
When I found out that she created that and, like, what it was used in, I was like, I just added her to the, like, list of podcast subjects because I was like, well, she's an old actress and, like, I've heard her name all the time before. So, like, maybe I'll check her out and see, you know, what her story is. Maybe it's full of drama, not inventions and...
drama with the U.S. Navy.
Yeah. And drama from escaping her husband.
Yeah.
So, like, she's got it all, man.
Multiple divorces.
Yeah. She's got it all.
Wow.
But also to go from, like, the most beautiful woman in the world to a complete recluse.
Yeah.
Who just constantly chased her beauty.
So sad.
Yeah.
Poor Hedy.
Pretty wild.
Yeah.
She's a fucking badass.
Yeah. Thank you.
If only her Coca-Cola thing would have worked.
I know.
One day.
One day.
That's it.
That's it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Half-Baked History Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review and subscribe for more high history.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Half Baked History. That's history without the O. Stop by and tell us what we should cover next. See you then.